In a world where politics is all about the fighting.
I watch a George Will or a Charles Krauthammer, and I watch them for years. They're losers. They're just losers.
Piers, you also have to... Have you ever fired... Have you fired a weapon?
So that young man should have shot those people.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if someone had...
WCHL cuts through to the heart of the matter. It's time for I'll Grant You That. Reasoned, calm, thoughtful, with your host, Berkeley Grimble.
Welcome to I'll Grant You That. This is your host, Berkeley Grimble. I'll Grant You That is a show about politics on which we sit down and talk across the aisle or the chasm or the abyss, as it were, depending on where you stand, and hopefully come to moments where one or the other of us can actually say, I'll Grant You That, and have a civil conversation, which I think is terribly lacking in our current political discourse. My guest today is Pierce Godwin. Pierce has been on the show before. Thank you for coming on again, Pierce.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Pierce, actually we met because Pierce started an organization called the Listen First Project. And
yes,
its basic goal is the impetus for it was really the same reason that I wanted to do this show. Because
There's
such a huge lack of communication, and all we're doing is seemingly demonizing and screaming at each other. And if we don't stop doing that, I'm fearful that we're never going to heal the rift that separates us at this point in this country. So, Pierce, tell us a little bit about the Listen First Project and sort of its genesis and what you're doing with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me on again, Berkeley. It's an honor to be here. As you said, our missions are the same. You know, we're looking to restore civil discourse and be able to come together in conversation. Listen First Project is a global 501c3 nonprofit that facilitates greater understanding, respect, and cooperation by encouraging that timeless but abandoned practice of listening to each other. You know, we look around and see our failure to listen harming our relationships and productivity at every level, from the classroom and the office and the park bench, all the way up to, of course, presidential elections and the halls of Congress and even international relations. You know, we feel like that if we hope for a healthy, prosperous nation, we just can't continue to demagogue our neighbors, as you said, simply because they see the world differently. You know, we're suggesting that not only their behavior, but they themselves as individuals are somehow less. And that's just not going to cut it. We have to do better. And I feel like that by individual people coming together and pledging to fully listen to and consider another person's views before sharing their own, to prioritize respect and understanding in conversation and encourage others to do the same, we can restore that civil discourse. One conversation at a time, starting with me and you right here today, we can make a difference. We can bring back civility to discourse. And, you know, right now, specifically, we're running our Listen First, Vote Second campaign, as it is an election year. I don't know if anyone has noticed. And in that, we are targeting the most salient case, I think, of our failure to listen to those with whom we disagree, politics. And unfortunately, I think this 2016 campaign season has taken America to new lows of civility and discourse. You know, never has our national conversation been more poisoned by that kind of divisive and demagogic rhetoric that you talked about. Never has our need to stop and listen to each other been more apparent.
It just occurred to me that one of the cardinal rules of parenting is that you should criticize the behavior, not the person. I mean,
yes,
not your child. And so it kind of is the same basic human need to separate what someone, you know, they perhaps what they think, then from who they are.
Exactly.
How do we sort of dial it back, though? I think that's the biggest question for those of us who are concerned about it. I mean, there's the big, you know, sort of going ahead and cutting to the election. I mean, how do we come back to the people who are going to lose and say, come on, let's get back together and make this our country again? I mean, I've said many times on this show, and I vow to repeat it on every show, that we are subjected to what is called the polarization industrial complex. So there's a whole media world out there, basically designed to keep us at each other's throats, because that is what drives ratings, and that's what drives the advertising and whatever the money that they make from taking those kinds of really divisive stands. So I mean, this, you know, nobody wants to hear. Nobody wants to hear "Kumbaya."
Right.
They only want to hear. You know, these people are horrible.
It's not exciting to see.
Right, it's not exciting. And sort of, you know, it's the whole car wreck
Right, right.
Attitude about
just watching for the crash. Exactly.
For the crash.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks watch the presidential debates for just that reason.
Exactly. You know, there's no question about it. I mean, in a way, it's not a bad thing because at least they watched.
Right.
And Lord knows with the level of the lack of general civic participation mm-hmm. that we have, at least that's a good thing that people were actually watching.
Yes.
But most people, I'm sure, were watching to see what outrageous thing Donald Trump was going to say.
Absolutely.
You know, rather than, you know, hear anything that they expected to be substantive.
Exactly. And unfortunately, Berkeley, we've seen a presidential election that has been characterized by insolence among the candidates. We've seen that on the debate stage. But then also both of them participating in this fomenting of fears and resentment among voters. And so you've seen, you know, voters coming out and projecting that character, taking their cues from our leaders. And exactly as you said, judging other people before actually hearing them out. You know, when we talk about what it means to listen first, we have some best practices, and one of them is to come with an open mind, humbly ready to learn and grow. But you know, if we're looking at our Facebook news feeds, which are currently littered with absolute, you know, vitriol and demagoguery of the other side, a lot of us are failing to do that. We're failing to come with an open mind, and we are looking at a person as their position, not as another individual. And we're not doing, as you mentioned, parenting, you know, the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. A little spin, listen first, you know, as you would have someone listen to you. But I will say there have been some bright spots, especially on the individual level. Listen First Project partnered with Urban Confessional, a free listening project out of Los Angeles. Some amazing folks led by Ben Mathis, who's an actor in Hollywood, and the Listening Center to take volunteers up to the presidential conventions in Cleveland and Philadelphia. And our volunteers were actually very encouraged by the number of folks they found surrounding the conventions who were willing to listen. Certainly they wanted to be heard, and they may have been protesting and advocating for their particular calls, but they were up for engaging in conversations as well. So we see that on the individual level, that we can make an impact, that we can move beyond slander and seek common ground with the newfound respect and appreciation for the other side.
But would you say, having done sort of research this to this point, that it does have to be individual?
I think that's where
really
it starts.
It's hard to do it any other way, or is it? Is there any other way to do it?
You know, when a politician who, you know, by their nature are a survivalist species, they don't want to be primaried, they don't want to do anything to offend some of their more ardent supporters, who may or may not be the ones who are best practicing listening, that's going to take a lot of courage for a politician to come out and stand for this, and stand for that dirty C word of compromise.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's far more likely, as you suggest, that it is going to come from the grassroots level, that those of us coming together and each one looking in the mirror and saying, Pierce, are you really listening, or are you just thinking about your retort and the next thing you're going
to
say?
Pierce, we have to take a short break here. Thanks very much. This is Berkeley Gribble with I'll Grant You That, and we will return. Welcome back to I'll Grant You That. This is your host, Berkeley Gribble, here in the studio talking to Pierce Godwin, and we are talking about what it takes to actually listen to someone and not be thinking about what you're going to say next, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, so give us a little synopsis of what you look at as listening skills, because it is a skill.
It is.
You know, and it's something, and it can be very powerful when you learn how to do it.
Right.
Because most people aren't listened to. And if you can convince them that they are being listened to, then that's where, you know, you can reach them. And,
yes,
then, and then they'll perhaps trust you that you're not simply out there to beat them up, you know, with the next thing that comes out of your mouth.
Exactly right. It takes two to tango, and we can so easily build on each other's growing frustration and even rage that we see around this election. But on the other hand, we can set that positive example for the person across the table, as it were. And what we've put together at Listen First Project, and you can find these on listenfirstproject.org, are some conversation guidelines. And quickly, what we've outlined is, before you even engage in a conversation, agree on the purpose. I mean, you have some real intentionality about what you're doing. You know, define the scope of focus and time limit for the conversation, and agree on a neutral location if possible. When you talk about the skills within a conversation, again, the golden rule: listen as you want to be listened to. Fully listen to and consider the other's views before sharing your own. Prioritize respect and understanding. Here's a novel one for the debate stage. One person speaks at a time. Wait for the other person to finish speaking. You also, as you talk about the skill, want to be fully present and engaged. We have so many mental and physical distractions, our telephones, whatever's going on in our environment, that being fully present and engaged can be a huge challenge for all of us. I know myself. And then physically engaged, that old eye contact we heard about as kids in that professional setting. Have that relaxed posture, nod, kind of affirming that, yes, I'm listening to you. I'm engaging in this conversation. Maintain a calm and respectful tone as well as volume. Berkeley, you wrote an unbelievable essay for us in our Listen First essay series called simply Don't Raise Your Voice. And you told the story of you and your brother and so poignantly illustrated for all of us the power of just keeping the volume down, because as soon as it goes up, we're losing it. So that maintenance of a calm and respectful tone as well as volume is critical. Restate what you heard said to clarify understanding, and then ask thoughtful and respectful questions. Then a couple more just best practices as we go into listening. We've talked about coming with an open mind, where you're humbly ready to learn and grow. Try to let go of those assumptions. Listen without judging. You know, listen to the person and their views, and don't assume any ulterior motives or impugn them with the assumptions you're coming in with. Seek to discover some common interests and areas of agreement. Get that rapport built before you get into more contentious issues. Be fully present and curious rather than thinking about how you'll respond, as you mentioned. And then pay attention to that subtext, the facial expressions, tone, body, language. And then open-ended questions are always a good idea. Oh, Berkeley, tell me more about that. How'd you come to that way of thinking? As opposed to, how could you? Don't you know any better?
And often you find that, if you really lower your voice, then people want to lean in to hear what you have to say. But that does take an enormous amount of self-control. And that's what I found when I started instating this rule in my own conversations about not raising your voice. It's not easy to do if it's something that you feel passionate about, but you really have to go have a sort of, and it's a great exercise in self-awareness. Going, okay, this person is going to be thinking this way and they're going to attack me, and literally the fight or flight sort of mechanism. I mean, you get that feeling in your gut that, you know, okay, I got to be prepared, you know, get my dukes up, you know, because this person is an idiot and I'm going to have to fight them off or something like that.
Exactly. And, so we lose the conversation.
Be able to just stuff that down and go, okay, I'm simply going to listen. Because for years it always was so frustrating and people said, oh, but you can't talk about politics, you know, politics, religion, you can't do it. Well, if you don't do it, we end up where we are.
Exactly.
Right?
Where we don't even know how to talk to each other. You've got family and friends who are unable to engage in the issues without somebody or all parties absolutely combusting.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, political protests and rallies turning to violence. So we've lost all sense of sobriety and groundedness in our conversations.
Well, so are you fearful, as I am, that something, okay, we're going to assume Trump loses. I mean, and to cut to his statement about not recognizing the winner, I mean, I think that was the most heinous thing that's ever been said. I mean, if that were to be the case, we would rapidly devolve into a third world country. I mean, the entire fabric of the American democratic experiment, you know, could be rent asunder, you know, if we don't have a peaceful transfer of power. And this is, here's this man basically threatening to not acknowledge the peaceful transfer of power. I mean, and he has all these people all angry that that they think the election will have been stolen from them. So, I mean, how concerned are you that there could be actual civil, you know, violence?
You know, despite the pictures and what we've seen across the country of the degree to which, you know, even violence has been fomented, I think there will be a peaceful transfer of power. I think those words are very unfortunate. We often talk about listening on the individual level, but we need to make sure we're listening to the voters as well and respecting our democratic process. I'm hopeful that that is just more rhetoric to incite that kind of passion and not something that would be manifest in violence beyond the election, because that would, as you said, just absolutely rip apart the fabric of our democracy and everything that we're built on. I believe we're in rough shape, but I don't see the American voters reacting in that way. 78% of them, you know, do believe that we are more divided on major issues than we've ever been in the past. And I would agree with that. And that's manifest in our personal relationships as well. But we also see that, you know, 57% of voters told us in a Listen First Project poll that they do think it would make either a major or huge difference if we just stopped and considered another person's views before sharing our own. So I think at that individual level, one conversation at a time, we begin listening to one another and our leaders will follow suit. But it does have to start at the grassroots level.
Well, we're certainly not as divided as we were, you know, during the Civil War.
Right.
So that at least, but we don't want to ever have to go back there. I think that is what, you know, the overriding goal should be.
Yes.
You know, but and really, I think if you really look at the issues, they're not any more divisive now than they ever have been. They really aren't.
They are.
Actually, in some ways, they may be less. I think it's just been pumped up.
Right.
You know, I think we've been pumped up to believe that when I look at my emails and, you know, and some of these people, the world is always ending.
Yes.
If I don't send $5, the world's going to end. But we're going to take another short break here. This is Berkeley Gribble with I'll Grant You That. We shall return. Welcome back to I'll Grant You That. This is your host, Berkeley Gribble, here in the studio with Pierce Godwin, the founder of the Listen First Project. The Listen First Project has the worthy goal of actually getting us to start listening to each other again, or at least, I guess again. I guess we used to listen to each other more.
It seems like we did.
I mean, I think we did. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, again, getting back to the fact that we all got our information from really fewer sources.
Right.
And so now that there are infinite sources, I mean, the internet could be the death of civilization. I mean, you could make that case.
You've got such balkanization of our information streams that I very easily can hear only from sources that substantiate exactly what I believe, from people just like me, and my ideas would never be questioned or challenged. So, of course, I'm going to think that you, Berkeley, have, you know, ideas out of left field and are absolutely uneducated because you're getting your information from a different place, and there's no even trust in the fact checkers anymore. We're not starting on the same playing field and out of, you know, the same set of facts.
And so the biggest question in my mind is, how can you ever go back to a world of mutually accepted facts? I mean, unless, I don't know. I mean, I'm really at a loss to try to understand what can be done to sort of come back. We'll never have, you know, Walter Cronkite and Huntley and Brinkley, you know, giving us the news
every
evening, you know. But there has to be some way to get back to that, and I have no idea.
And I think we're going to have to reach a breaking point. And if it's not this election, I don't know when it is. But when people just say enough is enough.
Right.
And each of us take on a certain humility in our conversation to say, listen, maybe I don't have all the answers. Maybe I'm not better informed than you on every issue. Maybe we can learn from one another. I'm really encouraged that thousands of people across the country and really world this year have signed the Listen First Project pledge.
Oh,
I think as more and more people do that and committing to fully listen to and consider your views before I share my own, to prioritize respect and understanding and conversation and encourage others to do the same, that's going to have a multiplier effect. That's going to be an example for our leaders. And I think with that, we can rise above the shameful vitriol and violence of the 2016 campaign. We can move beyond all this slander, and we can seek the common ground just because we've simply had enough. So I think regardless of what side you're on, I'm hoping that your listeners will make a new effort and commitment right now in the last few days of the campaign to listen first and vote second this year. But then also, as you mentioned, you know, continue listening. These issues aren't going away. You know, half the country is going to be very upset with, you know, the outcome of the election. But we have to keep listening in years to come as new issues arise, or we won't move forward in any productive manner as a nation.
Yeah, no, it's pretty frightening to think that we could have at least four more years of worse gridlock than we've had.
Right.
I mean let's say we're going to become a third world country if we can't figure out how to govern ourselves again.
That's right.
But one thing I like to ask people is, when was the last time you changed your mind about something? You know, I mean, are you open to changing your mind? Would you be willing to change your mind? And most people will say they are, because nobody wants to be blatantly closed-minded.
Yeah, and I think I am certainly, and I think it's the experiences with people from such diverse backgrounds, and my college experience and the years since that have made me even more open to do so.
Well, Pierce, we have to cut it off here. Thank you so very much for coming on. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Thanks for having me.
This is Berkeley Grimble with I'll Grant You That.